D3. Number 8B.
How on earth could we ever get on? Because humanly, we are mortal, born with a lot of thousand-year-old traditional beliefs, archetypal beliefs, universal beliefs, collective beliefs, traditional beliefs, national beliefs, racial beliefs, a whole omnium gatherum of beliefs and beliefs. How can I get out of it? From where should I take the power to get out of it? Well, the best thing is if I don't try to get out of it, but if I see that I have never been in it. That from the Christ point of view, the Christ says, I'm principle, which is always expressing itself as life, truth, and love. And those great terms, capitalized terms, those great constituents of being, they never lose their identity. They work without changing their identity. And therefore they come upon every situation, they come upon me, upon my life, upon my future, upon my mission, upon my everything, as the purification of spirit. And that spirit is so pure that it will purify what needs to be purified at this moment. That puts out of the way at this moment what at this moment has to be put out of the way. And therefore makes a way and carves a way and therefore can establish the true idea and manifest the true idea in me. In spite of me. Let's not be religionists. A religionist always says, I'm not good enough. A scientist says, science works in spite of me. And in this way, we find our true being, our true mission, our true individuality, everything. Then we come to Christianity, and in Christianity we have again a different order of the synonymous terms, because they have to bring out again something different. This order appears only once also in the textbook. Each one, the Word and the Christ and Christianity, only appear once in the textbook. It appears in the glossary. And the glossary does not give a definition. The introduction to the glossary shows that it gives the metaphysical interpretation of Bible terms so as to give their original meaning. It has, therefore, a Christianity sense, bringing back the wrong sense to the right sense, having therefore quite a different office. Namely, Christianity, we have seen, has always the office on the outcome of the Christ idea, therefore on man, of the compound idea. And so Christianity explains really the bigness of the idea in principle, the idea in God. It brings the true idea back to its original meaning. Bringing back the idea to its principle means to give back to the idea its bigness, its greatness. How big is an idea? Has the Christian scientist asked how big an idea is? Perhaps. And he has said it's infinite. What means infinite? Infinite just can mean nothing, or just a great space, or a great thing. But it must be infinite in every way. And so, here, Mrs. Eddy tries, in quite an interesting way, to give us a sense of the bigness of the idea. You know, she says in the last chapter, great is the idea. Great is the idea. Now, how great is an idea? The idea is always in God, in principle. Therefore, here in the glossary, where she gives this order as the metaphysical interpretation, therefore as the interpretation of the idea in principle, she gives that order and puts after every synonymous term a semicolon. You call it semicolon, not the comma. In the definition of God, they are separated by commas. In the translation, separated by commas. Here, semicolon. Now, a semicolon means something more than a comma. A comma is just a stop, so as to go further. A semicolon means this is the end. Therefore, what she means here is that she shows that the bigness of the idea is not seen by expanding the idea through seven synonymous terms, but by showing that each idea is one, is brought back to each synonymous term, and therefore has the greatness and the bigness of the synonymous term. Just as we said right at the beginning, the moment we touch idea, we touch the infinite one. So, here is the reasoning. It's principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. I just see that the clock doesn't allow me to go very deep into it. But in those study booklets you have a little bit more explanation on it. It means that she begins to see that Christianity is the outcome of the Christ idea. So she takes takes up the thought on the Christ translation which we had before, principle being manifested at the point of the idea of mind, and shows therefore principle mind by showing that every idea is an idea of principle, is a principled idea. And so shows an idea is not just an idea, it's the idea of principle. Principle has an idea. This idea is so big that it takes of the nature of the allness of mind. Because it is one with principle, it's one with the all. And that term which brings out the allness is mind. Mind is all in all. All is mind and its manifestation. That all is always an idea characterizing mind. So here we get the place value of mind as the all. So that we begin to realize the bigness of the idea first is that that principle has an idea, not that we have an idea. A principle has an idea. That idea is the all idea. It's not a part of a detail, something little. It's always the idea of the all. And because it's the idea of the all, it takes part of the nature of soul, where every idea is identified with every other idea. Because in the all, if the idea is the all, then it cannot be separated from any other idea. So we begin to get the sense, the moment I touch idea, I have touched principle's idea, that which principle has in view. This idea is mind. It's the all idea, not the detailed idea. And because it's the all idea, it is identical with every other idea. That therefore I can never touch an idea without not touching every other idea. Wonderful. We cannot touch the idea of intelligence and not at once the idea of power, and not at once the idea of inspiration, not at once the idea of life, and not at once the idea of dominion. Because it all links together, it's identical. The moment I touched any idea, because it's of the nature of soul, and soul means that there is identity with ideas, I touch any idea. I touch every idea. I don't need to fear and say, yes, I had the vision, but now how will it unfold? I don't have the power to unfold it, the means to unfold it, the opportunity to unfold it, this not, and this not, and this not. I have just an idea. This is not an idea. An idea is when we see that if I touch an idea, that it is of the nature of soul, that it has everything that belongs to it. Everything. Everything which is necessary for its fulfillment. That's soul. The infinite, identical interest of the idea. And if I see that, then I see, oh, well, then this idea must have the nature of spirit, namely the nature of infinite reflection. Where I just see that the moment I touch idea, this idea is reflected everywhere. Because through identity, it's one with every other idea, and therefore begins to reflect itself in every other idea. That's the reason why if somebody sees something new, which is true, which is of the nature of divinity, that we can be very sure that all over the world this will be reflected. That therefore in art, in literature, in architecture, in physics, in biology, in pantheology, everywhere, this idea somehow springs up. It is never isolated. It reflects itself everywhere. Never has an idea come on alone. We may not have seen that it is not alone and feel that it is alone, but retrospectively, when one has enough distance and perspective and always sees that that idea has come forth in the whole universe, in every branch of life. An idea is not localized. An idea is of the nature of spirit, and spirit cannot be localized, neither in time nor space. That's what the nature of idea in spirit is. And so naturally you begin to feel, my word, then if every idea reflects every other idea, then every idea really reflects life, truth and love. Then an idea, every idea therefore is going to be father to every other idea. It's going to be son to every other idea. It's going to be mother to every other idea. But therefore, every idea's father will support every other idea. That every idea will support me. That every idea as son will affirm every other idea. Will acknowledge every other idea. Will be glad about every idea. Therefore, every idea will be of the nature of love, of motherhood. Will mother every idea. The whole universe will mother the idea. The world will help the woman. Have you ever realized how today that prophecy of Mrs. Edipa comes true? Where she said in the last chapter, the world will help the woman. The idea of Christian Science is actually coming to birth all over the world. The medical people support it. The physicists support it. The pantheologists support it. The biologists support it. The cybernetics support it. Art support it. Everything supports the new idea. They don't call it Christian Science, nor do they know Christian Science, but they support the new idea. They don't care tuppence about the Christian Science movement, the Christian Science Church. They think, well, these people are anyway medieval in their thinking. But the idea which Mrs. Eddy has seen, the textbook which she has seen, the principle which she has seen, this principle is becoming to be seen all over the world. Christian Science is not a denomination. It's not a sect. It's not a church. It's not a movement. It is the world consciousness. And in the world consciousness, we can see it all over the place, that there is that tremendous conversion that the world helps the woman, not the Christians. The world doesn't help the Christian Science movement, but it helps the idea. Helps the idea. The idea is going forward. And so, can we see here how Mrs. Eddy tries in that interpretation of the biblical sense of God to bring the idea forward that the idea is always in principle, in God. What does that mean? And then through those seven synonymous terms and through the order, just gives a tremendous broad picture of the bigness of the idea. Then we come to the last column, science. At one time, we had some difficulties. We had seen those three orders and somehow didn't find a fourth order in the textbook. But somehow we knew that there must be a fourth order. Until at one time Mr. Dawley realized that the definition of God as given in the textbook can be seen from two different standpoints. And these two different standpoints are those two different standpoints that make the whole change of consciousness in the world today. The whole world is at the verge of having a great mutation of consciousness by coming out of a linear way of thinking into a structural way of thinking. We see it in art, we see it in literature, we see it in physics, we see it in cybernetics, we see it in mathematics very much, that the whole consciousness comes out of a linear way into a structural way. The definition of God gives a linear way. It shows, from your point of view, shows that linear way, mind leading to spirit, spirit leading to soul, soul to principle, to life, to truth, to love. That's the linear way, where we are only considering always the very next step in consciousness. And we are completely blind to the future until we arrive at the end. That's the way we learn to add 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1. It's the old way which is no more taught. But if we get enough perspective on this linear way, you can also see this linear way as structure. And this is what the Bible has been showing and what is the central symbol of the Jews, namely the candlestick. The candlestick has seven lamps, like this. But they are not connected from the one to the next, and the next, the second to the third. They are not connected that way. They are connected in a central middle stem. Principle is in the middle. And then it is connected with branches. The first one and the last one, mind and love, connected with the stem. Then spirit and truth connected with the middle stem of principle. And soul and life connected in this way. And when you look at it, it's structure. It's no more sequence. It's structure. And actually, the moment we have structure, we have really science. Because science is concerned with the structure of the subject. And so, the candlestick symbolizes now this science order, the structural sense of those seven synonymous terms. Now, on this chart which you have, we didn't quite put it the way we should, because we are not very good at drawing things and having curves in it, but only straight lines. Actually, what we should do is, you see, you take principle, and then combine life and soul with a curve, you know, those arms of the candlestick, and then combine really spirit and truth with a curve, and then combine mind and love with a curve, all going right through the vertical stem of principle and resting on principle. So that this gives a new concept of the seven synonymous term as structure. What does it mean? It means the new structure of consciousness. Building on what? Building on the top one, soul and life, namely soul as the identities of being. So that consciousness says reality consists of infinite identities of being, or of unchangeable identities of being. Soul, unchangeable identity, life of being, or of existence. We could also say it consists of all the infinite identified ideas of being. Mrs. Eddy calls them numerals of infinity. Just as we would have in arithmetic the 10 digits. Then we begin to see spirit and truth. Then we begin to see spirit is infinite reflection. Therefore, we see that these identities of a being are not static, but they combine constantly in a different way, and by combining constantly in a new way and different way, every time they bring forth a new form, truth, spirit and truth. The infinite reflection of truth bringing forth a new form, a new result, a new situation. And the last one, mind and love, showing that mind, which is manifesting itself as idea, that each idea of these infinite calculus, that each idea has its place in God, has a purpose in the plan of God, in the plan of being. That non-idea is being brought forth through that calculus of ideas without having a divine purpose, mind and love. And that's the ever-operative principle. That's the structure of consciousness. That's the structure of consciousness, the scientific structure of consciousness, which we... Just think about a telescope. The telescope is nearly a right symbol for that, nearly. Because in a... Not a telescope, sorry. A kaleidoscope. In a kaleidoscope, you know, you have perhaps 20 or 30 or only 10, a certain amount of colored glass pearls or of colored paper, little pieces of paper. The same amount is in that kaleidoscope. The same amount or the same variation of color. These are the identities of being. These are the facts of being. These are the elements of being. These are what constitutes being. Now, if we shake that kaleidoscope, we see a new form. And every time a new form, it has infinite combinations. That's spirit and truth. The infinite combination of spirit, the infinite reflection of spirit, the infinite variation of spirit, the infinite diversifying, classifying, individualizing sense of spirit brings always forth a new form. Every time we shake, we see a completely new pattern. Every time. Never repeats itself. You see, the more there are in it, the longer it goes until mathematically it could repeat itself. So you have that infinite calculus going on. You have first your elements, your numerals of being, the identities of being, then seeing that they are not static, that they are constantly in a calculus, constantly bringing forth a new form of being, spirit and truth, and then the kaleidoscope doesn't work anymore as a symbol, because every time you shake, what comes out is chance. this chance. Not so in the divine kaleidoscope. There, every time something new comes out, is of the nature of mind and love. Everyone has its definite place, its definite manifestation, mind, in the plane of love. It's no chance training. Here is a variation, because no symbol is ever adapted to symbolize spiritual idea exactly, or we wouldn't need a symbol. But here you see the meaning of it, that rhythm that goes on, those ideas that are in existence, in being, that they constantly bring forth something new, a new form. And that form which they bring forth are always manifestation in a divine plane. They are purposeful, they are aimful, they drive at some definite plane and design. And this is all that's going on at the ever-operative principle. That's being. That's what happened. That's not what we think out. That's being itself. And we jolly well should accept that. Accept it. Accept it. And as we accept it, our whole consciousness is no more linear. It's no more linear. Always trying to do the next thing right on the front of our nose. Then when that is established, go a step further. Then we have great distance and we take being as structure. Well, now I could really start to explain that chart. Then I could show you what I did show in the other towns. I could show you really that this chart is symbolizing divine cybernetics. That it is really seeing that what Mrs. Eddy discovered and gave us in the textbook is that divine cybernetics. Divine cybernetics deals with the one being, with a built-in self-organizing system, which runs on a spiritual circuit by which error is expelled and corrected. And that's going on by itself. But that is another subject, and there are plenty of tapes on that subject. But I just want to introduce here the bigness and importance of having a clear sense of the seven synonymous terms. Because Mrs. Eddy said, they are the signs. And if we would understand them, they would heal every case. They wouldn't heal every case the way the patient wants it to be healed, but they would heal every case the way being wants it to be healed. And so, I introducing this, I think I could give you some bird's eye view. And somehow I feel that something has dropped into your consciousness. Therefore, you will no more be the same. And the world will no more be the same because of us. Goodbye.